If you enjoy the content and point of view, please leave a favorable review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Blog Talk Radio. To have Shirley be your personal oral health coach, you can reach out to her via email, shirley@crosslinkradio.com. And now, back to the show.
Hello, this is Crosslink Radio, where we talk about health from the eye teeth on down. I'm here to help you understand some of the mysteries of health from the perspective of the oral healthcare provider. That's me, Shirley Gutkowski. I'm a clinical dental hygienist. I'm in the prevention mode, helping you keep your health at its optimum by bringing a wide variety of guests with the information that you want to know. You know that a few weeks ago I reported to you that I was down in Chicago visiting a few dentist pals that I have down there. Chicago is, depending on traffic, about a three-hour drive from Sun Prairie. And one of the doctors that I went to visit was Dr. Kevin Boyd, and he was telling me about Darwinian dentistry and airway orthodontics and all this stuff. And he said, "Do you know Timbre Lind?" And I was like, "No, isn't that the name of a song or something from the 60s? And he's like, no. Timbre Lind, she's a hygienist in California, and she's really super smart, and she's really involved in this Darwinian dentistry thing or this evolutionary dentistry thing, and you should get to know her and la, la, la." So, you know, it was a couple days later I got on email, and I don't know, we've been going back and forth ever since. And she does have kind of an interesting story to tell, so I wanted to bring this to light on this awesome radio podcast about health from the eye teeth on down. Her name is Timbre Lind, and she has been a practicing dental hygienist for about 8 years. She was a student who was always asking too many questions in school and questioned everything, which wasn't always appreciated. Boy, can I sympathize with that. She has always been health-minded and thought there was not just one cure for everything, like floss, I'm sure. There were a lot of working parts to a machine that to make it run smoothly, and her perspective was that we needed to be more mindful of all of them, not just a piece at a time. What got her started on this health path in dental hygiene was the Weston Price story. She picked up that book and couldn't put it down. Since then, she has always had a drive for a more holistic approach to healing and has shared it with her patients and those interested. She is not a licensed nutritionist. None of us are, but all of us are more nutritionists than we care to to admit. But she has done her fair share of research and thinking about nutrition and how it's a huge part of this systemic health issue that we have here. Then she found orofacial myology, which is huge right now and getting huger. She was, you know, she's in the kernel of this snowball that's picking up speed and girth. She took a course and they taught nasal breathing and a bunch of other things, as we've discussed in the past, and its effects on form and function, and see it every day in her patients. She currently treats obstructive sleep apnea patients, kids, TMD, and myofunctional therapy has helped and improved every one of those patients. Her goal is to get back to basics of where we started decades ago and to get our health back. Welcome, Timbre.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm awesome. So you are a Weston Price advocate and an orofacial myologist and, right? Only
yes.
8 years in. You really pick up fast. Good for you.
Yeah, I love it. I'm so excited about it. I mean, there's so many ways that we can help our patients. It's good to really be on top of that.
So which piece? Was it the Weston Price piece or was the orofacial myofunctional therapy piece that really propelled you to this evolutionary dentistry thing and this Darwinian dental hygiene? And I don't know, it's not real, nobody's really settled on a term yet. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. My description of Darwinian dental hygiene is a great term.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just go.
All right, let's do that one.
Evolutionary, you know, I mean, that the big term evolutionary medicine's out there as well now, which goes along the same lines. And a good description of it is more so just looking at the, like, why things happen as opposed to the what of what's happening. So, you know, a good example would be, as a hygienist, we have so many patients who grind their teeth, right? And we see their teeth and we're like, oh, you grind your teeth, you need a mouth guard.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at, well, let's look at why you're grinding your teeth. Have we looked at their airway? Is their airway closed? Do they have sleep apnea? Because it's been scientifically proven that when patients do have, do suffer from sleep apnea, the body itself grinds its teeth in a way to kind of wake the body up, or to at least provide the body with more oxygen, which is very interesting.
Right.
So yeah, I'm more looking at the why things are happening to our patients as opposed to what's happening.
That's really important, not just for airway. It's important for caries management and periodontal disease risk management, for everything that we do. It's all attached and applying a risk strategy and a risk modification strategy is a better way to go than just chasing holes in teeth. And I think the more I talk to dentists, the more they're just fed up with this drill and fill stuff. You know, the new dentists that come out of school are all about it and they're okay with it. But I don't know, somewhere around 8 years, they wake up one day and they're like, what am I doing? This is crazy. I just put a crown on that lady's tooth. I set her back $1,000. She had to take out a loan, and now she has a cavity under that crown. Mm-hmm. All inside of 6 months. And they are really, really changing the way that they practice. And I think some of them are also disheartened with what they were taught and that it wasn't hammered in harder.
I know. Aren't we all a little bit? I mean, the curriculum in school is just it's so ancient. And I mean, it really needs to be modified. That would be huge in dental school and dental hygiene school. I mean, to learn these things that we see every single day and sometimes don't have the answer to, when really it's in front of our face. You know?
Exactly. It's crazy. All right. So what is Darwinian dental hygiene then? I mean, is it just airway? What is it? It's more holistic with a W, right?
It is more holistic. Yes. It's, I would kind of describe it as looking at the why behind things, instead of just the symptoms, kind of fixing the cause.
So how does Darwin fit in then?
Darwin fits in with kind of the hunter-gatherers, right? So for example, there's been this whole Paleolithic or paleo diet fad that's been going on, that's been really big, and a lot of people are going back to paleo nutrition,
right,
which is huge. So we could take that into dental and look at the same concept of how we used to do things and how drastically we've gotten off the track with it. And, you know, for example, so with this oral myology that just kind of fit right in with it, when I studied that, I've always been huge on Weston Price. And to me, it just makes sense. What he did is he went and studied these different cultures, and he went more into the nutrition factor, which I think is major, of why these cultures, why some cultures got decay, and why some cultures' palates were high and narrow. And, you know, he just went into all these details of things, and then why some weren't. And he studied their nutrition and also their lifestyle and found a lot of interesting information. So with that, with oral myology, when I studied that, that brought in a lot of like nasal breathing, kind of going back to the hunter-gatherer way of breathing through your nose, breastfeeding your babies, and how that affects the function and form of your face. Not only your face, but your airway. I mean, when form follows function, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that was just a huge wake-up call of why are we not looking more into this? So,
And why not focus on that? And realize there's a cause and effect that goes back a lot further. One of the conversations I had with Dr. Boyd was about this airway orthodontics kind of a thing and how he's got to respond to some emails so we can get him scheduled on here. And just the idea of not removing teeth to fit the arch, but to increase the size of the arch to fit the number of teeth that we have. And that is as a goal, as opposed to having just an aesthetic goal, is something that's missed. And I think that it's being a problem now where so many general dentists are doing orthodontics. And I don't know if they're necessarily doing a lot of this airway management with orthodontics, but certainly the orthodontist should have been doing that. I know that there was a lot of hoopla around the time when general dentists were starting to do ortho in their own practices, and the orthodontists were feeling very threatened. And now I'm thinking back going, well, you guys, why weren't you driving this airway thing? However, I think that's 30 years ago, and they never did either. They're just really focused on the aesthetics.
Right. They have their blinders on. Yeah, and it's so true because, I mean, that's something huge to think about is, I mean, okay, as just a typical person in hygiene school, I remember sitting there and thinking, why do we have teeth that we just need to pull out? That doesn't make any sense to me. Why are we going? Yeah, and, you know, I work really close with this amazing orthodontist who started this whole, who's a leader in this entire airway orthodontics, and his name's Dr. Bill Hang, William Hang, and I love his term because he calls our teeth extra body parts. Why do we have extra body parts that people feel the need to take out? Because they're meant to be there for a reason. You know, we don't just grow extra body parts. They're there for a purpose. And yeah, to me, typically I was like, why do we have teeth that we just have to pull out? But really, that actually kind of goes into, the whole epigenetics of everything. You know, we start looking at environmental reasons that are affecting our growth and development. And with no breastfeeding, with open mouth breathing instead of nasal breathing, with all of these things, our facial structure develops long and narrow as opposed to more round and wide to provide the space for all of these things like airway and wisdom teeth and it's crucial, and look what it's doing to our society. And, even the society switching to more a soft diet with processed foods. We're not chewing on turkey legs anymore, and we're not chewing,
period.
Yeah, we're feeding our babies until they're 2 years old baby food, which is insanity. So that changes a lot.
So, all right, so you brought up the term epigenetics. Can you kind of give a little review of what that is?
Yes. Epigenetics is when it's the study of an external or environmental factors that are changing, that are kind of turning our genes on and off. So it doesn't have much to do with DNA, but it does have everything to do with the external factors and environmental factors and how our cells adapt to those changes. So we literally are changing our genes through our environment.
So I'm going to give an example of that just kind of was brought to fore this week when I was down in Florida visiting my parents. My mother has no room for her teeth, and she had teeth pulled out even when she was a kid back in Hungary in order to make room. And my dad has all 32 teeth. I think he lost his very first tooth when he was 70-something, a wisdom tooth that just, you know what happens to wisdom teeth by the time you're 70-something. And so my brother inherited, wink, wink, my mother's small mouth and my dad's big teeth. And so he had four permanent teeth removed as a child, and he had braces, and he had a relapse. I found out this week that my mother had trouble breastfeeding him. So we know now that that was probably due to a tongue tie of some kind, especially since his ortho relapsed. He had braces on. They wanted to do it a third time, and he's like, nah, never mind. He's in his late 40s now, sleep apnea. And, you know, you can't make a really huge argument about it, but when you start putting case after case after case with similar circumstances, and there's plenty of them.
Are you there?
Like him. Yes, I'm here.
Oh, you cut out for a little bit.
Oh,
sorry.
No, sorry. Oh, that'd be terrible. So anyway, when you start putting together case after case after case like that, and there are plenty of cases exactly the way I described, where the teeth are removed, the kid had trouble had trouble nursing already, so that indicates a tongue tie. And had that been adjusted back then, his arch would have probably expanded further. He would have had been able to nurse longer, and on and on and on. And he may not be suffering these, you know, epigenetic consequences of having this tongue tie.
Mm-hmm. That's huge. And see, that is a perfect example right there. And how it snowballs. You know, now he's 40 years old dealing with all of these issues. And it's funny that you brought up, you know, he inherited, quote unquote, your mom's small mouth and your dad's big teeth, because Weston Price actually goes into that quite a bit, that he, the cultures that he studied, one of the things that he found was, quote, you know, structural defects usually are not hereditary. He calls them defects. That's kind of a strong term, but structural defects usually are not hereditary factors, even though they appear in the members of the family or the parents. Mm-hmm. Rather, they're a product of the environment. That is epigenetics right there. And that was Weston Price, and he studied that years and years ago.
What was that, the 1930s or was it 40s? Do you remember offhand?
I think it was the 40s, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he sold his whole dental practice, and he went on an archaeological odyssey across the globe, mapping out all of the arches and the decay rates in all of these, you know, backward tribes, again with the air mm-hmm. quotes. And then did he go back and revisit those tribes after the superior Western diet was introduced? And that's when everybody started to have malocclusion and a lot of decay, stuff like that, right?
Exactly. And so that's why he makes it a huge point in his book that he really studied primitive, he calls it primitive people, mm-hmm. And what it is that they do, which are a lot of the hunter-gatherers, and how he also found that they had a high immunity to many of our serious illnesses that we have today. And that's from just their lifestyle and what they eat. It's pretty amazing. So if we have all this evidence, it's so insane to me that we're not really listening and paying attention to that.
So how do you use all this information now on your patients, and what kind of a dentist do you work for where you're able to apply a lot of this? Because a lot of this stuff is anti-dentistry somehow. Some hygienists are kind of running into brick walls, finding a decent place to work that will allow them to practice at this level.
Yeah, that is true. And excuse me, that is a factor. It's nice to find, I work for an amazing woman, Kathleen Carson, who allows me to practice what I want to practice. And so with that, with patients, I'm able to really talk about, you know, it's in small doses for patients. We all know that. So if somebody does continually come in with recurring decay, you ask them a couple questions. What are you eating? What's your diet like? What's like a day? What are your daily meals like? You know, and a lot of them will report high in sugar, high in processed foods. There you go. I mean, that's it right there. Not enough water. Either drinking sodas instead of water. And I mean, this is all stuff that we deal with patients every day, and we always have. So, really just looking more into that. And
so all right. So you work with a really decent dentist then that allows you to practice this way. And so you give them small doses. So how often do you teach flossing, let's say, to a 45-year-old person? because that seems to be the experience that most people at that age range have with their dental hygienist, and that's the only thing they learn. Which, yes, that is an indictment, hygienist. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, exactly. I honestly don't. I don't teach flossing to many people. I feel like they've been hearing the same story for 20 years, and what's going to change it now? So what I do is I try and approach the patient on as far as what they're willing to do. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's kind of how you're going to get success with that. But yeah, I mean, it's trying to teach an old dog new tricks. It's hard.
Yeah. So do you have any success stories that you could share with us where there was less calculus or their periodontal disease kind of took a break or something like that?
Yeah. I have, trying to think off the top of my head. I had a patient who was really struggling medically, and, you know, she was having a really hard time. She was also, she had a lot of stress going on in her life. She was taking care of her mom, and who wasn't doing too well, and they were moving houses and just all of these external factors that were weighing down on her. And she had done really well with her diet for the past year, and then it tanked because of these stressful things going on. And so when she came in, she's like, oh, I was diagnosed with diabetes, and I've got high blood pressure, and all of these things started going on. So I really talked to her about nutrition and how important that is, and gave her a card to one of my friends who's a nutritionist, and she went and saw her. The next time I saw her, 6 months later, she had dropped so much weight. She looked better. Her blood pressure was down, and her diabetes was controlled just through diet. And she felt better. Something like that. And I mean, to me, that's huge when the patients are willing to follow through, when they care enough to follow through. And, it just goes to show how much, you know, what we put through our mouths affects our entire body, which is a big topic. And you know, so things as simple as, I've been really into alkalinity, and, you know, the whole pH testing has really caught on, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And, so with patients who have a lot of tartar buildup, me, I really focus on the alkalinity and changing their, just a few things in their diet, like drinking more water, or even something as simple as adding baking soda to their toothpaste, because baking soda is an alkalizing factor. Mm-hmm. And to be able to get their saliva back to a basic level is the goal. And when their saliva is basic and alkaline, calculus can't form, cavities can't form. It's just not the environment that they can live in. And so I have a couple patients who have followed through on that, and they come back and their tartar buildup, because you get those people who are like, oh, I've always had so much tartar. That's why I come in so much, and it's just something to them that just is, you know?
Yeah, it's their normal.
It's their norm, yeah. So giving them a couple tidbits, they come back, and they're like, I look at it, and I'm like, you look great. I don't see anything. This is amazing. And they're like, really? So, you know, it's kind of fun to play with it a little bit and see what people do and how compliant they are. And it's always exciting to see the success stories.
Yeah. Yeah, I can believe that. So how are you going to be growing this Darwinian dental hygiene thing? I know that you're looking to recruit and to bring a bunch of other hygienists together who have a similar experience to what you're describing.
Yeah, I'm really looking for those like-minded people and for the hygienists who are interested in this and who see, you know, tongue ties, lip ties, who see all these, just even periodontal disease. We see it every single day. That's contributed to mouth breathing. And why are they mouth breathing? Were they breastfed? And, you know, how often do they breathe through their nose? And what kind of diet are they eating? Like, just people who are looking at the entire picture, instead of just, oh, you have gum disease, you need to floss more. And I'm hoping to get out to RDH under one roof and really mingle and find those types of people who are interested in that and the hygienists that don't want to just clock in and clock out every single day, that they want their work to mean more to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see where that would make your job more interesting and have a better relationship with your patients. I bet you found the same thing I did, that when you talk to your patients about the health of their mouth, they are extremely interested. They're also interested to hear about your vacation or tell you about theirs, but that's not really what they're there for. And oftentimes when they're telling you about their vacation, they're trying to, what are they trying to do? They're trying to distract you from finding something in their mouth because they're used to having something found all the time. And they're so tired. They're so fed up with cavity after cavity and then getting bullied every time they come in between the dental hygienist and the dentist, and you need to floss more, yada yada. I don't know that I told you about my grandson who was 3 at the time. My daughter-in-law calls and says, oh my God, he's got 8 cavities and they want him to go to the hospital. And I was like, what are you talking about? They live in California, so it's not like I have a lot of influence, you know, but at least she had somebody to call. And I don't even know where I was going with that. It was just so out of the blue. And you can't have just, that's what it was. When my daughter-in-law asked the hygienist, why all of a sudden does he have so many cavities? She said, well, are you flossing his teeth? And I just about jumped through the phone. I was furious. I don't think my daughter-in-law would have told me the name of the office because I had gone over there at a pizza.
Right. You would have driven, gotten in your car then, and driven over there. Oh my gosh.
Oh God. It's so horrible when we're blaming the patient all the time. All the time.
Yeah.
The patients have to own their disease.
Yeah. When there are so many other factors that, in all honesty, flossing is, I don't even like to even use that word.
Yeah, F word.
I mean, yeah, the F word. It's like, that is the very last thing that we should ever even be thinking about. There's so much more going on.
Awesome. So, well, it's been fun, Timbri, talking with you. How can people get in touch with you? Or do you have a website that they can look at? And do you have more information there?
I do, yeah. I have my own website. It's integrativehygienist.com. And integrativehygienist@gmail.com is my email to get a hold of me. But I'm really hoping this catches on in it. And I know that I've even been reached already through my website of people who are all into the nutrition aspect and who really want to make a difference in their patients' lives. And so I'm hoping this will really help and kind of reach a few more people that are like-minded like that and that are willing to jump on board. So
me too. And I'm hoping that some patients will start demanding this of their dental hygienist too, to have a broader conversation other than this is how you floss, you lazy, slothful patient. You know, I want them to have the ammunition they need to get excellent care at their dental office.
Yeah, you want the patients to ask questions. You want them to be interested in their own health and what's going on, and we want to be able to be the ones to provide that for them. We not only have that relationship with them already, but we see them so often.
Exactly. And if all we have is brushing, flossing, and fluoride, we are not giving very good care for our patients. Oh, yeah, and don't drink soda. Avoid sugar at all costs. I mean, we just have this little narrative that we just, you know, press play on an auto player. There's no need for a relationship. Just listen to this tape.
Totally. Oh, my God. So, to me, that's like hell.
Yeah.
I have to say. I mean, I could not go to a job that only had that.
Oh, man. Yeah, no. And patients do have a right to have better conversations at the dental hygienist appointment. And it's hygienists like you that they're looking for. And if we can get a pile of hygienists like that, then we can start advertising that way and it'll be easier for patients to find us. So.
Yeah. And think about how exciting, like, think about the role that we play. I mean, yeah, we're not doctors. Yeah, we're not nutritionists. We're not nurses, anything like that. But think of the power that we have with how many patients, number one, already care about us and love our relationship, but come and see us way more often than they'll ever see any of those other people.
Exactly.
So we have that power just to give them just a little bit of information. It doesn't have to be a lot, but just a little bit to change their life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's huge.
It is huge.
It's really exciting that we have that.
And it starts in the mouth. Health starts at the mouth. What you breathe, what you eat, everything starts there. And people need to know that better. And I'm glad to know that you are also in that camp and we can start whipping these flags around and making everyone more aware.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Thank you so much, Timbri. Thanks. And I look forward to meeting you in person soon, maybe even down in Lost Wages there at the Underwood Roof Conference.
Me too. I hope so too.
Have a great rest of the day. Bye.
Okay. Bye, Shirley.
That was Timbri Lind, and if you wanted to know more about her and her journey and what she offers to her patients, you can go to her website, www.integrativehygienist.com, and there you have it. I hope you had fun listening to this. Now, patients, you have some ammunition. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk to you next time.